Hey guys, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I am Ben Alderman.
I am Blair Morrison. As always, we are brought to you guys by Reebok, the exclusive outfitter of CrossFit and the CrossFit Games. And we are at a interesting time in our nation's history, Ben.
Yeah, we just had a, pretty monumental election, and didn't turn out the way that a lot of people were kind of thinking and projecting. And I feel like that's even trickled down into the affiliate space, and where I feel like the gym vibe is a little different right now.
Yeah, in case you guys haven't been paying attention, the election Ben's referring to is which Beyond the Barbell host is most likely to be on People's 100, top 100 sexiest men.
I think I already won that.
And the vote is in, and it's not Ben. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, of course, we had presidential election. Donald Trump surprised pretty much everybody that was polling this thing, and won by, a pretty significant margin in the Electoral College. And I know what you're saying. Like, it's definitely, especially that week. This week hasn't been as touchy, but last week you could tell there were a couple people that wanted to talk about it, and then a couple people that didn't want to talk about it. And like, as a coach, you're trying to avoid that type of thing at all costs, right?
Yeah, you don't want to ruffle any feathers. You know, as gym owners, I think fitness in general, like we love anybody who's passionate about it, you know, improving their fitness, right? And so this is like a really divisive election, and so you were walking on eggshells. I was walking on eggshells just a little bit, because I want people to know that I love them no matter who they are. I want my athletes to know that I'm behind them no matter what their political views are, as long as they're here trying to improve themselves. And so I really felt like that, because I'm a pretty outspoken individual anyway, but you want to keep that stuff in its place.
Yeah, and you got to think that as a member walking into your gym, you're really kind of trying to escape a lot of that type of stress. You know, I'm sure like households are divided, like, and workplaces are divided, and it's on their mind and they're talking about it. So when you go to a CrossFit gym, what you really want to do is like burn off some of that steam and not really have to deal with those types of thoughts. Right.
It's our escape from reality a little bit, right? Like
it's
workout,
like, right. You're doing work to improve yourself, but you're also kind of like getting away from things that maybe are just hard to think about or hard to grasp. You definitely feel the tone was a little bit different last week. I heard a TED talk that kind of touched on why people react the way they do to these types of things. And the thing that stuck out to me about this talk is how kind of primitive these responses are. He cited this Bedouin proverb that said, "Me against my brother and I against our cousin, and me, my brother, and my cousin against a stranger." And it just talks about how kind of naturally tribal we are. And, you know, we can speak to that even from like gym to gym. And then, so like, you know, your gym and my gym might be competitors within the Sacramento market. But then if we talk about CrossFit versus like the fitness establishment, now we're kind of we're on the same team now.
Yeah, right? Sure. Or even like at regionals, like we're, you know, you and I are
Northern California.
Yeah, we're representing Northern California together. Yeah, that's very true. I think about that and I hear that proverb and I just go, man, it's really true. I mean, I didn't hear the full TED talk myself, but it strikes a chord, because you know what that's like. You know, when you have that bond with somebody, and when you're coming against a stranger or somebody who maybe conflicts with that, you know how you're going to respond. And just, I can really resonate with that.
Yeah. I remember when I went to college, it was, people would ask you where you're from, right? And when I went to school on the East Coast, so I would tell them I'm from California. And if I was down, say, traveling to San Diego to visit, you know, my grandma, and somebody asked me where I'm from, I'd say I'm from Sacramento. And if I'm in Sacramento at a bar and they're like, "Hey, where do you live?" I would tell them Folsom. You know, like the context that you're in determines your level of tribalism, right? Or your, like, how kind of wide that net is that you're going to include somebody in your sphere. And that proverb kind of captured that perfectly. So the way you realize that you have something in common with your brother is when you are faced with somebody who doesn't have that bond, right? And the way you know that you have something in common with your cousin is when you're faced with a stranger who doesn't have that bond. So with the election, right, you have this Democrat-Republican kind of divide where people feel like they have nothing in common, right? Like
all that's highlighted is your differences, right?
All that's highlighted is your differences, yep. Right? And it becomes really easy to – I mean, I don't remember an election that was based more on which candidate you hated more.
Like, oh, this takes the cake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least in our lifespan, like this is the one where it's right. Like, who do you hate the least?
I didn't talk to anybody ever who said, I really like this person. That's why I'm voting for them. It was more like, you know what? I don't like either of them, but I like this person less.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, in California, we I think we're 60% or 70, 60 something percent for Hillary is what,
right.
What, but we live in California and we still heard that same
yeah.
thing. You didn't hear anybody going like, Hillary is just perfect. She aligns with my views. You didn't hear too much of that, right?
Right.
And that's coming from a state that was overwhelmingly Democratic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's just interesting how entrenched people get. They're going to dig their heels in, not necessarily based on something because they love it, just because they sure. know that they're defending their tribe. Their
yeah.
team.
I wonder about in those other states, though, you know, like maybe – what's the most Republican state that we have?
Somewhere in the South, probably.
Yeah, somewhere in the South, right? I wonder if there were, you know, if you walked into a gas station or went to a restaurant, if there were people who were like, yeah, Donald Trump is my guy because I love that man. You know what I mean? Or are we just not hearing that because out here in California, there's a little bit of a, you know, obviously the cultural differences.
Sure.
Right? Are we just maybe not hearing that?
I think there is. I mean, I think maybe in the Midwest, a lot was talked about how the white working class felt almost ignored, and that Donald Trump was speaking directly to them. So I think maybe he was their candidate from the beginning. That type of person who, you know, used to be a factory worker in Detroit or, you know, farming and things like that. Where like, hey, traditional political elites haven't done it for us. You know, they say they're going to do these things and they're not delivering. So I want to see an outsider in there.
Yeah.
However, I will still – and I think that's legitimate. I'll bet you, though, if you would have given people the choice of someone who's not Donald Trump but was still an outsider, they probably would have preferred that person. Just like if you got somebody in a lie detector test who's a Democrat and said, I'll give you Hillary Clinton or I'll give you any other Democrat, they're probably going to choose any other Democrat just because for some reason both of these candidates – they had so much wrong with them.
You know? And you know what? I don't know if it's just that, you know, and without becoming too political, maybe it was just the nature of this election, right? Like, had we done the same type of digging on Obama versus Bush in you know, 04 or whatever it was, right? Like, would we have seen – was it 04? No. It was 2000, right? Bush.
Well, Obama never went against Bush.
Oh yeah. Okay. So Bush.
Gore versus Bush in 2000.
Gore versus Bush. Excuse me. Yeah. And then had we done that, would we have found and given everybody a platform through social media? Would we have found the same kind of smear campaign, essentially, right? Which really just highlighted people's negative aspects rather than their, you know, political.
I mean,
views. Or was it really that these guys were? I don't know. Like, they just weren't as good of candidates.
Dude, my opinion, I think these were uniquely terrible candidates in the sense that you're talking about with,
right.
like baggage and bad history. I mean, think about how many people had vendettas against Hillary from when she was the first lady.
Sure.
You know, that's a lot of stuff to carry through that. I don't think any other presidential candidate has ever had to,
right.
to like, lug with them.
Right.
And, I mean,
Donald Trump.
I mean, he's a walking fiasco on TV, right? You saw him on The Apprentice. Like, he's got all this stuff that he's got to deal with too. And so now you got the nation choosing between probably choices that they really would rather not have to choose between. And that's what I saw. And that's how I felt.
I mean, I think if Obama was on the ticket for a third term,
I think he wins.
He would have won in a landslide,
yeah.
Right?
And people would not be happy about that.
They wouldn't be. No, see, we still
right.
wouldn't have anybody.
People would
be
not
happy
be
about.
Happy about that.
Yeah.
But I think also if you had any other Republican besides Trump, I think against Hillary, I think they win.
Yeah.
I think they win as easily as Trump won this time.
Sure.
So I think that's just the nature of how poor a candidate choices there were.
Yeah.
But I thought it was one thing that I liked about it was that it really made you think about why people are feeling the way they're feeling before and after, and like this whole idea of, you know, us kind of picking teams, the tribal thing, that the fact that it's so deeply ingrained, that's like instructive, you know.
Yeah.
As a business person, you think about how you are trying to grow your business and what type of people you're trying to appeal to.
Right.
This has got to be a consideration that, you know, you're gonna have going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and one thing is too, is like our gym is made up of all kinds of different people. Right there, it's not like your family where everybody kind of looks like you and whatnot. So bringing it back to the affiliate space or as a gym owner space, you know, we just find these commonalities with people that I think they're very, very deep, and they supersede any amount of differences if we allow them to. And that's what we really need to do, is find ways to find what we have in common. Because I know there are people who are gay or black or Mexican or mixed or whatever that love fitness just as much as I do. You know what I mean? And they love being around me, and I love being around them, you know, and they're my friends regardless of who they voted for, you
right.
know?
It's us against the unfit.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. That's what it should be, right? Us against the unfit. So me and my brother and my cousin against a stranger, right? So we're all together in our fight against the unfit. That's a really good way to put it, you know?
Yeah. That's the bond that the gym creates, is, hey, people care about their health, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people out there that don't.
Yeah.
And so we have that bond that brings us together across like racial lines or political lines. And I think it's important to like keep that alive, right? For sure. Just like you're saying.
I think there's cool things that happen too, where we can kind of reestablish that nationalist mentality, where we are proud of our country, you know, like we have this weekend, we have the CrossFit Games Invitational, right? And so we got USA versus Canada versus Europe versus Australia in this really spirited, healthy competition.
I know. Wouldn't it be nice if CrossFit was popular enough that the whole country was tuning in?
Like, yeah.
Good timing, right? Like, right. That would be a great way to come together.
Yeah.
But at least we're paying attention.
Yeah, we're paying attention here at Beyond the Barbell headquarters.
Right. That's bringing us together.
Yeah.
What do you like this year? You think the U.S. is going to take it home for a third straight year?
Well, I think that with Rich Froning and Ben Smith on the team, I mean,
Rich, how come no Frazier, I wonder?
Frazier said he's not feeling very well. I think he's got a little bit of an injury, maybe something nagging from the games, you know, just going so fast.
So he was invited. They wanted him there, but he said, no, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. At first, when I didn't hear he was on the team, I didn't realize, because I didn't follow social media as closely as I should. I thought maybe it was like a sponsorship issue, right? Because he's not a Reebok athlete.
Oh, true.
Right? So I thought maybe the Reebok Invitational is not in his contract, and he's not – he doesn't have to do that, and so he's just like, hey, I'm injured, right?
Dude, wouldn't it be great if it was not a sponsorship issue, but it was like a personal vendetta issue? It's just like, no, I'm not going to be on a team with anybody.
I hate
Rich. I hate Ben.
Yeah. I feel like Matt might say something like that, and I would understand that from him.
Yeah. I know. I don't think he feels that way at all.
No,
like,
no,
he's
no.
been around. I know he's been at Rich's training. He's buddies with him. And Ben, everybody loves Ben. But yeah. I'm just saying it would be fun to talk about that if that was the case.
Yeah. I mean, on the women's side of that team, Kerry Pierce and Brooke Wells both making their first time appearances. So,
right.
You know, it's good to have somebody like Rich in there who we know is like seasoned. Ben is obviously seasoned.
Yeah.
And then you have these kind of two not too well known, you know, I mean, Brooke Wells is known really, really well from her social media presence, but like in terms of like, they're not proven commodities, right? In terms of how they're going to compete on that stage necessarily.
And, yeah, and really Rich only, and Ben are champions.
Yeah, only in comparison to Ben and Rich, right? Obviously, they're proven competitors, but it should be a really cool event for them, and it'd be nice to see, obviously, the U.S. win again. But
I mean, they got to be the favorites, right?
Yeah, yeah, they do, I think. But you have in the Europe side, I mean, if it comes down to the girls, like a lot of team competitions do, you've got Katrin and Sarah, right, are the girls for the Europe team.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I gotta think the edge goes to Europe in the ladies department. That's two of the top three fittest the last 2 years,
right?
Who are their guys?
I mean, they're 1 and 3.
Yeah, one and three the last 2 years.
Yeah, so there's really no better combination of ladies when it comes to the individual side to put together onto a team side. So I think you have Gudmundsson is one of the men.
So all Icelandic so far.
I'm pretty
sure. Is the whole European team from Iceland?
I don't know. I got to look at here and make sure I know exactly who the
– That would be incredible.
The Europe
team. There's no way they would let that happen. They couldn't do that. It's got to be somebody else.
Yeah, it's Goodmanson and then Lucas Hoberg. So
he's Hoberg from Sweden.
Is from, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Sweden, I believe.
So an all Scandinavian team, at least.
Right. Well, what are you going to do? Stockholm.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, that's a good team.
Northern Europe has kind of been the hotbed for the CrossFit movement, I guess.
I guess so. You know, and
I remember when I was over there, I traveled to Copenhagen a few times, and that was like the epicenter at that time, and then Iceland grew later. But Southern Europe just it hadn't caught on as quickly, kind of largely because they have more to do with the Mediterranean down there. You know, a lot more, you know, leisure activities in Spain and Italy and south of France. But yeah, that's impressive. I like that team a lot.
Kind of an interesting team, I think, is the home team, right? Canada, they've got Camille is the coach of the team, right?
Yeah. I don't know how that's going
to
work.
I know. Well, shoot, sometimes you talk to her, and if you've had a chance to talk to her, Blair and I both have had a chance to talk to her, you know, maybe her accent or something would be make it more difficult. But she is speaking to her home country. So, like, there's no accent. There's no anything, right?
Right,
she's got experience. She's a champion.
But the whole country doesn't speak French. Like, half the country is English first language. So she's going to be speaking English.
Well, of course, she's going to be speaking English. But I'm just saying they're used to it a little bit more up there. And,
well, yeah.
And
here's what I mean. I mean, Cammie is actually – I think some people hear her speak and they think that maybe she's not that intelligent, which is totally false. She's
that's
super,
not true.
She's
that's not
super
true.
Smart. But she is very excitable and kind of like she's talkative. She talks a lot. So I'm wondering how that, cause sometimes that personality doesn't always like lead best.
Sure.
You know, it's good as an individual, but I don't know how that works with a team. So we're going to see. That could be, she obviously has incredible experience. She's an amazing athlete. She knows how to strategize every possible
workout.
The
cool thing about her, I think, that I see is she's worked with some high-level coaches, right? She's worked with Hinshaw really, really, really closely, and she's worked with CJ very, very closely, and CJ's got a ton of team experience, right? And so she
think
can kind
of – might be helping out?
Well, at least she can lean up on that, right? Like, she can go, you know what? How would CJ handle this? And if she needs to, she could text him.
Hey, both those guys are American, right?
Yeah.
Maybe,
so really
maybe they better not be helping too much.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I guess CJ, if you're listening to this, don't help out Camille.
So on her team, she has who?
She got Fikowski, which is pretty cool.
Right. Fikowski.
Right? Everybody's talking about Brett right now. You have Patrick Vellner.
Vellner's a stud.
Yep. Didn't he tear his bicep or something like that? And yeah, I think
at the games?
Yeah. Or no, before that. I heard he did something like that and then, yeah. Or partially tore it.
We saw him at the Granite Games. He just was destroying everybody.
Yeah. Is he a big guy? He's a pretty big guy, right?
He's pretty big. Yeah. He's big the way you're big.
Okay.
Like, yeah, he's not like a
giant head.
Fikowski is much taller, but Vellner's, he's solid, man.
Kale Reason-Thibault and Michelle Letendre.
Yeah, that's a solid team. I don't think that, I wouldn't put them as a favorite, but.
I wouldn't
But the
either.
Home team, you never know.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes when you don't have like those stellar athletes, you know this, right? People work really well as a team, and then they're able to communicate. There's no – somebody steps up and is a leader, and then all of a sudden, you know, right there on the field, led by an experienced competitor like Camille.
Yeah. And I guess what it comes down to is all these athletes are going to be good enough to beat the others if it's their workout. You know?
Sure.
So it's just going to be over the course of that entire – what is it? 1 hour or hour and a half. It's a really short window.
Yeah. Yeah,
what decides what's the programming going to look like?
And they're going to have at least three or four scoring events. You're talking about like 15, 20-minute workouts tops, and when you're split that with four people. I mean, you know that. Like, my strengths and your strengths, they cancel each other out really, really well. But in a 15-minute workout, I'm going to win a strength workout by 4 or 5 reps, and you're going to win an endurance workout by 4 or 5 reps. You know what I mean?
It's going to be more like grid. Who can do this stuff the fastest?
Yep.
You know?
So if you look at that, I guess you got to look at who's got the shorter athletes, right? Maybe that. So if you look at that.
Cycling, yeah.
Yeah. Look at maybe like Australia, you have Cara Webb on that team, and she can move some weight, and she's not that tall.
So right? She's definitely not tall.
Yeah, right? So.
And you also have Toomey, right?
Yeah, Tia Toomey. I don't know how tall Tia is. I wish I did know.
I mean,
know,
she's undeniably incredible. I think she probably feels that she should have won this past year.
Yeah. I mean, true. Yeah. She's 163 centimeters, so I think if I convert that to inches, that's because she's, you know, using the metric system.
Right.
That's 52 inches, right? So she's 4 foot four.
Oh my God, I can't believe that came up as. All right, I can do that. It's, she's 64 inches, so that's 5 foot four.
I was close.
You were close.
I was close.
Who are the men on the Australia team?
Rob Forte.
Okay. Classic competitor.
Right.
Rob's, he's been around the block plenty of times.
And James Newbury.
All right. He's a newer guy, I think.
Yep. Yep. So that should be interesting. I mean, this guy's got a 208 Fran, which means he can cycle the bar pretty quick. You know, his Grace is 126. Helen is 659.
Fast Caesar, he can run.
Yeah. So he's good. And he's 177 centimeters, so 4 foot three. You know, 87 kilos.
How big is his head, though?
Yeah, not head size, 347
average
millimeters.
Very average.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I feel like just because of the names, you have to lean towards Europe or the U.S.
All right, well, who are you going to take? I'll give you first pick. You get, and then we'll have a little side bet go here.
I think we should have to call it 1-2-3.
1-2-3?
1-2-3. Yeah, 1-2-3.
Mm. All right. Okay, let's go. Ready? One, yeah. Two, three. Canada.
U.S. U.S.
You're going U.S.?
Yeah, I'm going
U.S. All right,
US.
I'm taking the home team.
Yeah.
In Toronto. I think Drake's going to be there. He's going to be firing up the home crowd.
Kevin Durant wasn't really all that impressed.
He wasn't that impressed.
No.
That was great.
So I think that I like Canada. I really do. I like their chances, but, you know, I got to remember Camille's not on that team. She's leading that team, right? Which I feel like if she was on that team, it'd be a little bit better.
We'll see.
You know? And then I think the second place team, well, you got to take U.S. as second, right? Or are you going to say the Europe's going to get second here?
I'll take U.S. second.
I'm going Europe second.
I'll take Europe third.
Yeah.
So we both think Australia's going to be fourth, or you think Canada's going to be fourth?
Boy.
No love for the Aussies. It's just a long flight for them, you know?
It is a long flight
for them. It's a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. My third place, it's going to be, Drake. Drake will get third.
In his Raptors jersey.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking at this, right, and this, I don't know, the Invitational. And how do you get this thing bigger? How do you continue to grow the sport? And I'm wondering, are they ready for a fifth team yet? You know, could
from a different region, you mean?
Yeah, from a different region. Or
like Asia or South America?
Yep.
I don't think so. I don't think we've seen enough athletes, I mean, really make a splash at the games level to build a competitive team. I mean, again, it's hard to say, but I would say no, not yet. What do you think?
Well, I look at it and I think of the draw, right? And I think that more people would be involved if there were more countries. I think it'd be just fun to watch. Like, right now, I feel like it's the U.S. and everybody else. I feel like the U.S. would have a good chance if you really did do U.S. versus the world, which they did the first year, I believe, right? The world team versus the U.S. team, and I think the U.S. team still won, right?
I think so.
I think so. Or if they didn't, they, you know what I mean, they got second. That's pretty good. But, you know what I mean? But I feel like you can still do that, right? I feel like that's a possibility.
Yeah,
but
I guess you're right. The Olympics, as an example, like you could send a swimmer from the Congo, right?
Right.
I forget where that – there's an example of this. It was the first time someone had ever qualified for the Olympics from this specific country in Africa. And she was obviously not going to compete for a medal, but the fact that she was able to represent her country or her part of the world was a huge storyline. And maybe we should be thinking more about storylines than we should be just about who's going to win.
I mean, or you can think of it this way. If you have four CrossFit Games competitors, two men and two women, right?
From your country. From your country.
That you should be able to compete.
There you go.
Right? So Iceland would have their own team, right? Because they had...
Okay, I see what you're saying. You want to make it just a national thing?
Yeah, make it a national thing, okay. Right? Because U.S. is a team because it's a country. Canada has a team. It's a country. You know, if four people from Mexico qualified and went to the games in the last, say, 2 to 3 years, whatever the limitations are, then all of a sudden you can have a team. And now you can, like, hey, how many teams are going to beat the Invitational this year?
I don't know about that. I think that you should...
All games competitors?
I think you should mimic it based on the CrossFit Games qualifying regionals, if anything. So you can have a U.S. team, but Europe is its own region, right? You don't qualify from Iceland.
Right.
So that's, like, unfair. They only have 300,000 people there.
Yeah, but I think that they would really increase the national attention if you sent a team from Iceland, because they're, look at, it's me and my brother against the strangers.
It's true.
Right? Me and my brother and my cousin, maybe literally in Iceland. Who knows, right?
I mean, it just seems like the U.S. would have such a big advantage.
For sure.
In that scenario.
For sure. I agree. I think they would. But if you look at it right now, three people are from Iceland.
I know. Iceland is such a funny phenomenon, right? Yeah.
And they didn't even take all the athletes from Iceland. They could have taken Annie.
Right? There's right? others. Yeah, there's other options that would be top picks for right. other countries. Yeah, I know.
So, you know.
That's insane. It's really crazy how good they are there.
Yeah. And then so that begs the question, right? Do you change the format of the Invitational in general, right? And I think that you could, and I think it'd still be fun.
It would be cool. It would be cool. But that's kind of also already being done at the games themselves. You represent your country. They have your flag next to it mm-hmm. at the games. So this, to make it a team thing, it's so much more difficult to have that many people from a single country, especially when they're smaller. I kind of like the way they've kind of grouped it together. Europe is one area. The U.S. is one area. I think to ask like a country like Japan to supply four team members to the game, it's just never going to happen. But Asia is possible. You know?
Sure. Antarctica? Impossible.
Four penguins.
Four penguins, right?
Oh, man.
They'd win the swim workout.
For sure. For sure. They would for sure win the swimming workout. Oh, man. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk kind of dial things back to what people are doing individually, kind of in preparation. Like, there's a lot of local competitions that people do in the off season. Yeah. We're kind of considering like this period from July to December as kind of an off season right now for CrossFit, where people go back to the drawing board. Even if they didn't make regionals, or if they were made regionals, didn't make the games, like the two people sitting in this room, you kind of reevaluate and you try to recharge,
yeah.
Right? You fix what's wrong,
yep.
And you try to come back better than ever. Well, we're kind of coming up on the tail end of that time period, so I think it might be good to talk about what people should be doing now and what they should start transitioning away from.
Yeah. So for me, I look at this, and as an athlete that still has a long way to go in terms of developing my aerobic capacity, that has been my focus up until about a week or so ago, where I said, you know what, I'm going to start lifting a little heavier. I use the liftoff as a kind of a chance to lift heavy again and, you know, go for those maxes and see
if you lost anything.
Yeah,
right?
See what I lost, see where I was at. I tied my lifetime PR on the snatch, which made me feel really, really good. A snatch that I had not hit since your competition before I actually had surgery.
Over a year ago,
right? So, and then I clean and jerked 380. I cleaned 380 five separate times trying to get that jerk, and I missed it each time. But that's only 5 pounds off that would have been a 5 pound PR if I actually would have hit that jerk. I've cleaned 385 before, but never went for the jerk at 385. So,
and the cleans at 380 looked pretty solid.
Yeah, they felt good. They felt solid. So, you know, for me now, I have to add in some of the stuff that I'm good at, so I can, you know. I can't stay in aerobic capacity mode solely this whole time. But the fact that I haven't lost much of it allows me to kind of go, you know what? I can stay in it a little bit longer. I can keep that there, and I just need to add in a little bit of what I'm good at, not too much.
That's so what do you think if we take the Open as, hey, beginning of March, right? And take the Open as the next big thing that people have to do, if they're going to be competitive CrossFitters, which, you know, that's not everybody that listens to this podcast, but there's a lot of people that are knocking on the door that would like some advice from athletes that have made it. And
well, and the thing to remember too, is there are people who are, you know, sitting in that 1100th place and they really want to break into the top 1,000.
Right.
Right. So they're competing really against themselves and the community and seeing where they're at. And it's like, you know, it's fun for them to make sure they're making progress. You know, a lot of our athletes pay a little bit more for their membership, I think, than you would see at a normal local gym. And so they care about progress. They care about quality. They care about improvement and not wasting their time. So I think that some of this stuff really will speak to them too.
What do you think the drop dead date is for when they need to start doing stuff to get ready for the Open? Like Open specific stuff. So the Open is probably the most predictable stage of the qualification process, and for so you kind of know what's going to happen more or less. You know that you have to be, you know, really, you know, fit for your metabolic stuff in that 8 to 15 minute window, being able to be work at a high heart rate for that entire time and mix in the movements how you see fit. Like, when is the time they got to start doing that? If they've been, hey, say they've been working on strength, right? Mm-hmm. Or a lot of people do that in the off season.
Sure.
Like, when do they got to get away from that?
Well, I think that if you're looking at a drop dead date, I think that you would probably want to, at about 6 weeks, you're going to want to make sure you shift gears heavily into, you know, traditional CrossFit WADs, you know, with 95 pounds for guys, 135 pounds for guys, you know, somewhere in that range, you know, simple movements.
Higher volume stuff.
Higher volume where you're completing 100 to a 200 of some given movement in one 10 to 12 minute window. You know, you want to be able to hit that repetition or those higher number of reps, you know, on a regular basis. And what that means is if you're going to wait that long, that you probably should shut down your strength training to almost nothing, right? Because you're going to really slow down your recovery and your body's ability to adapt to those higher, you know.
You're going to be hella sore.
You're going to be so sore. You're going to be so sore. And so your body's going to need to adapt. So like if you're used to doing like long running workouts and you know, you need to do, you know, high volume snatches, power snatches, your low back is going to be blown up. There's really no reason for you to go out and run 3 miles later on that day. You know what I mean? Unless for some reason you can justify it. If you're at the top end of regionals, right? And you're like, hey, I'm going to make it through the Open. I'm going to make it to that place and I can't lose even a second. But I would even say then, even for the first couple of weeks, if you're going to wait till that 6 week mark, you probably should just shut it down a little bit on some of the other stuff.
Yeah. And really there's three classes of people that we're talking about here. You have the people that are not strong enough. They know they're not strong enough. They feel like they get buried on the heavier weights. So they've been spending this time, hopefully, squatting, deadlifting, pressing, skewing their training heavily towards building some 1RM stuff, but also like 5 to 7RM, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Really building that piece of their fitness. So that's type one. Type two is the person who needs more of the aerobic base, a la Ben Alderman, right? Yep. He's been spending a lot more time out from under a barbell, running, rowing,
burpees
forever. Things to just teach your body how to breathe when you're tired, using oxygen efficiently, maintaining a high work rate without hyperventilating and going into oxygen debt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third piece is a person who their biggest weakness is their skill level,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Who maybe still needs to learn how to butterfly their pull-ups or, you know, isn't great with toast a bar or, you know, some of these or wall balls. It's like a specific movement mm-hmm. that comes up to bite them. They don't have muscle ups yet. So they've been trying to do a combination of things to get that particular skill to be a more, you know, more of a strength than a weakness, right? So I think if it's a strength person, you're probably going to need to cycle back towards the Open, right? Like sooner than if you've been working only on lifting, like you're going to feel very uncomfortable when you start doing the
That's
Open
very
style
true.
Workouts again.
Yeah.
If you've been doing a lot of aerobic training like you have, yeah, it's going to hurt a lot more. It's going to hurt more than you've been hurting, but it's probably not as you know, as big a departure from what you've been doing as the person who's been doing all lifting.
Sure. Yep.
And then I'd say the skill person, they've probably been doing workouts this whole time, CrossFit WADs.
Yeah.
They've been trying to mix in these skills into workouts to see if they can do them when they're tired.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it's probably going to be the smoothest transition.
Yeah.
However, there's a fourth category of person, the person who's trying to improve at everything all at once.
Right.
In which case, they're actually not improving at anything.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you said it and I didn't have to because right. There's some people from my gym listening to this right now.
But they're trying to do everything, right?
Yeah, they try to do everything. They don't want to lose anything. And it's like to actually focus on something for more than a week is really difficult for them, right? If you say, hey, if you could shut down this side of your training for like the next 6 to 8 weeks, you'll be so much better. And they're like, no.
I can't do that. I'm going to fall too far behind.
Yeah, I'll fall too behind.
Dude, so we've been
behind what? Behind what? Are you at regionals at this point? Right. Are you at the games at this point? What are you going to fall behind?
We've done a cool thing this cycle or this off season with our team where we would do these gymnastics, the strict gymnastics tests, right? Like strict pull-ups, like every minute for 10 minutes, strict handstand push-ups, strict ring dips. So very strength-biased gymnastics things, because that's a weakness for a lot of teams. And basically, their score on the workout, for example, every minute on the minute, you try to complete, you know, as many unbroken strict handstand push-ups as you can, mm-hmm. right? With a max of 10 per minute. If your score is greater than 50, then you go on to the Metcon. If your score is less than 50, like 49 or below, then you don't get to do the Metcon. You go into this supplemental pressing program.
Sure.
Which has, you know, like dumbbell Arnold presses or, you know, bench press.
Yeah.
Like things like that. Like more traditional strength training.
Yeah.
And until you can show that you can surpass that basic strict strength test, like basically what we're telling you is like, hey, this is not the time. You don't need to be focusing on your Metcon right now. You right. need to be focusing on this. And here's the proof. You couldn't do this. You couldn't pass this test.
Right.
And that's been kind of fun because it's really frustrating for certain individuals.
Yeah.
But it's also very validating for me as a coach because guess what? They're all getting better.
Right.
Right? It's working.
Yeah.
It's working. And now like we've had to make these tests more difficult because obviously you could keep raising the bar till you get to a level where people are doing 100 strict handstand pushups in 10 minutes.
Right.
If you got 6 people on your team, you can do that. You're going to be tough to beat on a handstand pushup workout.
You're going to be real tough to beat.
Right.
Yeah.
That's been kind of fun.
Yeah, that is fun. And you know what? I haven't had a breakthrough or breakout idea like that when it comes to the strict gymnastics strength stuff, but it's been really fun to watch the maturation process of my team, you know, the people who I would consider my competitors, on the guys and the girls side, right? Like I feel like I'm always bumping heads with the girls. They have different ideas about what they want and how to get there. And so I end up running, you know, like head on with them often.
Whereas the guys, they know what you're trying to get to.
Yeah, they know what I'm trying to get to. And they have some of the similar skill sets and whatnot. I'm dealing with some pretty high level guys at this point. But then I had this conversation with one of the girls and this is like 2 or 3 days ago. And she said, this morning I couldn't do that weight. You know, just the workout was a very regional-esque type workout. It was 5 rounds of 10 push press at 205, 125 I put for the girls, and then 3 legless rope climbs, and then 10 D-ball over the shoulder, 100 pounds for guys, 70 pounds for girls, for 5 rounds. So you had 50 push press, 15 rope climbs, legless.
Push press specific.
Yeah.
You couldn't jerk it.
Couldn't jerk it, right?
So
it's very, very, very heavy. And she came back and she was able to handle the push press a lot better. But I think what happens is, as a coach, we have to constantly push them, their boundary to what they're capable of, right? Like we have to constantly set the workouts just a little bit out of reach, just a little bit out of reach. You know, at least occasionally we have to go there and do that. And sometimes it can be frustrating. But I think those are the things that are also, as an athlete, you have to use as a mirror to where your own fitness is at, right? And if you're kind of confused, like, why couldn't I finish that workout? You're not really taking some of the signs that you've had around you this whole time and applying them to yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's important to make the distinction between like a competitor, someone who's trying to go to regionals, and you know someone who's you know working on general fitness, because for a competitor, scaling isn't always the option. It's not always the right choice. Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
You know, when we get to these open workouts, it's about volume of work. But when you're in the off season working on things that maybe you're not strong enough at specifically, like you got to know what that weight feels like, mm-hmm. even if you don't finish the workout.
Sure.
'Cause that's the only way your body's going to adapt. Right? You got to feel that weight. So I mean, that's absolutely the right call. And when you have an athlete whose weakness is the ability to move a heavy weight like that in a workout, mm-hmm. man, they're just going to be on the struggle bus until they develop the strength to do it.
And they got to learn how to pull back other things, right? Like if you're like, hey, you know what? You're not going to lose a rowing workout, right? Because a rowing workout's won and lost by a few seconds. You know, your rowing pace, maybe you hold a 157 and the other athletes are able to hold a 151. But at least you can get through your 1,000-meter row. You know what I mean? That you got sitting in front of you if you got to go 1,000.
Right. You're not going to DNF on the row.
No, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to DNF on the box jump. You're not going to DNF on the burpee. You're not going to, but then we find some people doing so many of those things, right? And they forget that the open and regionals and the games, depending on where you're at, is different, right? So, you know, just remembering that I think is really, really important at this juncture in the season. That being said, one other little piece of advice I would say is things like making sure that you're starting your, let's say, better habits, right? Because, you know, some people, maybe they consume too much alcohol or their food intake is not on point or their supplementation is not on point or their water intake is not on point. Start setting those things in place now as best you can through the holidays. And then we come out on the other side on January 1st when everybody else is eating clean. You've already kind of started those things. And I think that will help you maybe not add a couple pounds here or do whatever you have to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, we get wrapped up in talking about the training modality, right, and the programming, what you should be doing for exercise. But, man, it's going to be really hard to make gains if you're not sleeping, you know, 7-8 hours a night.
Yeah.
Or if you're, you know, getting hammered
yeah.
three or four nights a week.
Or you're overeating.
Right, if you're not eating the right kind of food at the right time. So, yeah, absolutely, point well taken. And I think, dude, I got to work on that too because I think – since I've been, you know, having my ankle laid up a little bit this last month or so, I think I've definitely started eating less. I tell you that. So now I'm trying to start coming back and like starting to train harder again. It's like, man, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's tough.
How much longer till you get to take off the air cast? Or air splint or whatever you call that.
Dude, I can walk around with it pretty good without now. I got no limp, no pain. It's just range of motion and stability on the outside. So I would say I won't do any running on it until probably another month, but so probably around Christmas time. But I was able to do box squats fine earlier this week, and that was right to just about parallel.
Right.
So I'm expecting in the next 2 weeks to be able to do full squats.
You know? Yeah, and this I think is a good chance for us to highlight once again your and I difference as an athlete. But you're not going to be able to run again for another month, right? And a month after that, you're going to beat me at every single running workout there is, right? And that just goes to show that there are certain things that we are, one, maybe predisposed to be able to be good at, but then also you've developed that side of your fitness through tons and tons of training. And so if you are still in that point where you need to back off on something a little bit, back off on the things that you're best at and be able to work on the thing that you're not as good at.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Like you said, you just matched your lifetime snatch PR after not having done any heavy snatches for what, 2-3 months?
Yeah. I went for 1 rep max one time in, I think since January.
Yeah. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
You're not going to lose that. That's obviously your strength. For me, I'm not going to lose my ability to run. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be there.
Yeah.
For me, it's going to be,
did you probably could beat me to 5K with your shoe untied like that, that air cast on?
False.
Right now.
No chance.
All right. Well, in a month, I think you'll be able to beat me.
But yeah, I think that's true. And it's just hard to let go of those things though. You know, it's hard for people to trust that their strength is still going to be there or trust that their endurance is still going to be there after they've set it on the shelf. But realistically, if you think about the number of months that you've lifted weights in your life compared to the number of months that you've been taking a break to work on the other thing, it's overwhelmingly in favor
it's
of
a drop in the bucket, man.
It's a drop
so,
in the bucket.
Yeah, so small.
Your body's going to still, you'll take a little a momentary dip sometimes, but like your body has memory, man. Like it's in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's in there.
For sure.
The things that are going to make you weaker isn't going to be your lack of training. It's going to be your lack of, you know, growth hormone as you get older or your, you know, testosterone going down. Like those are the things that are going to like drop your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be because you took a 2 month break to get better at this aspect that you need to get better at.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing is for everybody out there who's been doing their training one way or the other, if you've been training you've already, your body's already wanting to adapt to something, right? It's already kind of responding to different things. And so if you shut down one side, you're going to make huge gains at this point. If you're sitting around going like, well, I just need to start training. Well, you might be kind of screwed, right? If you're that person who's just been kind of lazy up in this point, haven't been putting in work, haven't been addressing anything, just been maybe, you know, working out once or twice a week, right? Like, it's hard to ramp up. I think there are people who used to take like full off seasons. And there's enough people who aren't right now, and the sport's so big that you gotta keep putting in some work. You know what I mean? Up until this point, so you know, make sure the volume is at least there on a regular basis.
So big events coming up, right? We are we're planning on going to Wadapalooza again.
Yep, Wadapalooza, right? Miami,
Bigger and better than ever.
Yeah,
as promised by Guido and Steve.
Dude, is Wadapalooza never? I mean, ever. Ever not bigger than it was the year before?
Yeah, I know.
It's huge. It's incredible. I mean, I find it so odd that people will spend so much time and energy and effort to try to make it to spectate the CrossFit Games, but then maybe don't necessarily consider Wadapalooza,
right?
Because they don't really understand. I mean, Wadapalooza is a big deal.
It's a big deal, and it's a better spectator experience in the games.
Absolutely is, yeah. Right? You don't have necessarily the creme de la creme in that place where they're winning. You know, there's as much on the line, you know, in terms of prestige, but in terms of competition, in terms of athlete caliber, in terms of workouts.
And access to those
and
athletes.
Access, it is. It's the red carpet, dude.
Like, you're going to see Sam Dancer in a Speedo and get a picture with him.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, that's going to happen.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to happen. It's not even hard. Like, he's walking around Athlete Village in a Speedo.
Right?
And owning it.
You're going to see all those guys. You're going to see Rich. You're going to see Graham. You're going to see all the girls, all the, you know, Stacey Tovar and Miranda. Everybody's there. They're there every year because they love going back to it because they know the event is great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at that time of year, it's nice to get into the sun. And Beyond the Barbell will be there.
Yeah.
We're going to be there. Thanks in large part to Reebok, you know, our title sponsor. They're going to be putting us up right there in the village by their retail tent. And we're going to have a booth.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of becoming a part of that scene as well.
Yeah. It's really like an honor to actually even think about that. You know, it's like there's some things that are happening in the sport and in fitness and with all these big athletes, and to be able to kind of be tied in with them at all is it's a privilege, you know, and it's neat.
Yeah. And to be at the marquee events, that's something that, you know, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting, because to be part of those events, not just as a spectator, but kind of as part of, you know, the fabric of it, you know, like that's what, I mean, I'm excited about that. I want to be there for years to come.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be exciting next week to talk about who, was closer on their predictions for, the Invitational, which obviously will be me. So it's kind of
Canada,
but that was underwhelming as well. So anyway, you know, if you guys want to and you haven't already, you guys have got to make sure that you're following us on social media on Instagram, because we're gonna have a few things coming up. We've got the UFC fight coming to Sacramento.
That's right.
We're gonna try to get in and talk to a couple of those people.
Dude, that's Uriah's last fight.
Uriah's retirement fight. And so maybe we'll break that down a little bit next week and just kind of, you know, recap his career and see if we can get him get a few words with Uriah.
Get him back on the podcast.
Yeah, Paige VanZant, another competitor, not just a Dancing with the Stars competitor, but an actual UFC competitor. UFC fighter is here in Sacramento as well. And so I don't know exactly who else. I think some of the other Sacramento-based fighters will be on that ticket as well. So at the new arena.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Looking forward to that. Make sure you guys are following us at BTB Podcast, and go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and keep sending us your questions, keep sending us your requests for who you guys want to see on the show, and we will make it happen.